We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Every problem, even this problem, this horrific pandemic, there are solutions to this and ways that we can help more people quickly. I think most Minnesotans give Governor Walz fairly high marks for how he has handled this situation. But I wanted to reach out to Minnesota Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka to join me this morning and talk about the good, the things that are good that are happening right now, but also talk about how things might be improved. Senator Gazelka, thanks for joining me this morning.
Yeah, Paul, good to be on your show, and happy Mother's Day, all the mothers out there.
Absolutely. Happy Mother's Day to you and yours. I lost my mom 8 years ago. I miss her every day, and especially on Mother's Day. But glad you could make it this morning with a $2.5 billion projected deficit. What would you like to see happen? I know short term I wanted to talk a little bit about the proposed raise for tens of thousands of Minnesota state employees. What do you think should happen there and why?
Yeah, and let me just say that that's part of the reason I've been advocating for opening up the economy. People's livelihoods, do it safely. You know, I think people have forgotten that it's not about stopping the virus. Our best experts at the University of Minnesota talk about developing herd immunity, and it's going to take some time. It's not a matter of a month. But, you know, the good news is it hasn't gotten out of control. It's roughly 25 deaths a day, which is, we don't want, but as everybody goes through this cycle of getting infected until we get a virus, that's part of what we're planning for. And so people forget that, and if it's going to be 18 months or 24 months, we have to figure out how to open up things safely. And so, but as a result of the actions we've taken, we moved from a $1.5 billion surplus to a switch of over $4 billion and having a big shortfall. And I'm pretty certain it's going to be a lot more than that as we move towards next year. And so one of the things I've been advocating for is a hiring freeze at the state level, and they have now done that. And I've also recommended that the state contracts that are coming forward, that we give them last July's raise, which they already have, but that we don't give them the raise this July. And the problem is that solution is not there at this point unless the governor and the House agree with me. And I'm surprised that they're not agreeing with me. I'm surprised that they're advocating for a pay raise coming this July when, frankly, with a huge shortfall, that's, I think, irresponsible. And so I think we can do it. I want to work with the state workers and their unions to just say last year's raise, yes, this year's raise in July, no.
I think some of this is the optics. Some of these state employees are truly on the front line battling this pandemic and being exposed and perhaps exposing themselves and their families to higher risk. So I think that's some of the pushback that I've seen is, do we really want to deny a pay raise that was, correct me if I'm wrong, already negotiated to these people that are on the front line?
Well, it's all virtually all state workers. It's a huge contract, not just for nurses and frontline workers. And if they wanted to work out some sort of negotiation where they carve those folks out, I would certainly be open to considering that. You know, and the other thing, you know, about the over half of the state workers under these contracts do get a COLA adjustment automatically of 2-3%. The raise would be above that. And again, I'm just asking them, I would prefer that they relook at the contracts, but if not, I'm asking the governor and the Speaker of the House to say, let's give them last year's raise. I absolutely want them to have that, but not this year's unless we can find something to work out.
Senator, scientists at UC Berkeley project that if 80% of Americans were to wear masks day in and day out when they go out in public, COVID-19 infection rates would be about 1/12 of what they are today, the infection rates. My question, are you wearing a mask when you go out into public, and should this be a sign of political ideology? I know some of my conservative friends do not wear masks. Some do, but I mean, it seems like this has become the latest touchstone in the culture war. You know, should I wear a mask? Should I not wear a mask? If I wear a mask, does that, you know, make me appear to be liberal in my politics? It's kind of nutty, but a mask, correct me if I'm wrong, a mask is not to protect yourself, but to protect those around you from yourself in case you cough and sneeze and maybe asymptomatic and not even showing symptoms. But what do you think about the whole mask situation and how this has become something of a touchstone in this ongoing back and forth?
Yeah, you know, I'm following the CDC guidelines, which both for the Senate and how I live my life. And so I'm doing the social distancing, washing your hands, covering your cough. If for some reason I had a fever, I would stay home. But the only time they're saying it's strongly recommended that you wear a mask is if you can't practice those things that I just described. And so in the Senate, on the floor, we have been able to practice the social distancing and all of those things. We asked the Minnesota Department of Health to watch and to look at it, and they said we are. And so I'm not. If I went to, for example, Costco or Menards, they say you have to wear a mask, and I'm going to wear a mask because they tell me that's the only way I can do that, or that might be what we need to do for church services. And if that's what it takes for me to be able to go to church, you know, I would be supportive of that. So, you know, but again, it comes back to we're not trying to stop the virus. We're trying to get a vaccine, and we're trying to control it so that we don't have more people that get infected at one time and overflow our hospitals so that we can't help the people that truly needed it. But, you know, there's this switch somehow that we're trying to somehow eliminate it, and that's not what the experts recommend that we should be doing. Part of it is getting herd immunity, and that's, you know, so it's an interesting dialogue, and I believe the governor's on the same page as I am, except, you know, somehow it's been lost that we're just trying to navigate through this, slow the spread, but that it's going to spread.
Indeed. And again, the epidemiologists from Osterholm to Fauci all predict a second wave, perhaps a more lethal wave later in the year, that if in fact this follows the Spanish flu of 1918, we can't let our guard down. And I know whatever you do or say, whatever the governor does or says, there will be people second guessing. That's the nature of policy and politics. But threading the needle between saving lives and saving livelihoods, everybody wants the economy to open up faster. I have not met anybody who doesn't want to go back to the way things were in January. But what do you think we can do to get more businesses back up, producing revenue, allowing their managers to make payroll and keep people paid and employed in this state while still respecting the safety guidelines from CDC and some of these other sources? What else should we be doing, Senator, that we're not doing right now to be able to get at least going in the right direction in terms of opening up the economy faster?
Yeah, and that's good, because livelihood is not just your job. It's also the suicide rates that happen as a result of it, and the domestic abuse and all of the other problems that have accumulated with shutting everything down and sheltering everybody at home. So step one right away is lift the shelter at home and strongly encourage seniors and vulnerables to continue to shelter at home. That I've been advocating from the very beginning. I did not realize that the University of Minnesota model said that that produces the same results. It's just that we reached the surge earlier. So that would be number one. Number two, we really need to open up all businesses except those that can't practice some of the key CDC guidelines. And so rather than pick and choose who's a winner and who's a loser, you know, why a resort or a gas station in Baudette or Minnesota can't be open when they don't virtually have no cases up there, to me is silly. And so the other thing I think we need to do is give people courage to live their lives responsibly, practicing all of the guidelines that everybody's talking about, and then be out and about in your life. Why, for example, Menards can be packed with people and people go there, but we can't open up a church who also can practice the same kind of guidelines? To me, it's counterproductive for all of the things that go into livelihood, our emotional health, our spiritual health, our financial health. All are very important as well.
So, Senator, you don't believe the stay-at-home order should be extended?
Yeah, absolutely not. But okay. I do recognize that the people, nursing homes, for example, where about 80% of the deaths are, we have to have precautions there. If you're vulnerable, even though there have been very few deaths, even for vulnerable people under age 65, you need to pay attention an extra amount. And my in-laws are in an assisted living center up in northern Minnesota, and I called the director there, and none of the residents that are there are afraid, according to the director. They want to see their loved ones, and yet we can't. I can't literally go up there. The workers are more concerned, and they have some fear. And then the other thing that I learned was that every single one of them had a do not intubate, DNI, which means they would never even go and get a ventilator because they've signed off that they don't want that. And so we have to have courage to face this. It's a very real virus. We should not take it lightly, but we can do both. We can practice all of the safe guidelines and be out there doing life. And you know, why a remote campground up in the Boundary Waters has to be closed makes no sense to me. Why a fishing guide cannot have somebody in the boat with him, but somebody else can. It's a lot of things we're trying to micromanage because of our fear of this, and we just have to be willing to face the fear, recognize it's a serious problem, but live our lives because it's probably going to be with us for the next 2 years.
Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Yeah, I'm with you. Some of these regulations do, in fact, seem arbitrary, and you know, there's room to fine tune and tweak and hopefully get more people working without threatening our health. My mother-in-law has COVID-19. She's 91. She's in an assisted living facility in Bethesda, just outside of D.C., and she's doing okay. She's on day 26. So,
wow.
Last question, Senator. Were the fish biting yesterday? Have you heard any reports up on Gull? Or
no, it's mostly been just frustrated people. I mean, fishing guys and others just mad at the whole thing. But you know, yeah. Let me say as we finish here too, I am committed to working with the governor on this. I may disagree with different directions, but it's really important, frankly, that every governor is successful. That's, you know, each state they're counting on the governor to, you know, make the right choices. They're all making different choices, frankly, and we're gonna look back and see what was effective and what wasn't. But really important, and frankly, Minnesotans should know that we are working together. We may disagree, but we're actually moving things forward. We've all of his requests for emergency supplies we have given him, and so people should know government is working in Minnesota. Even when we push each other, it's still working.
All right, Senator Paul Gazelka, I sure appreciate you coming on today, and thank you for your leadership, and be safe out there, okay?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Take care.
You too, sir. Thank you very much.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.